return to Oz as soon as possible. There's a big case that I think needs some outside perspective. More info when you arrive.
From the wonderful land of Oz, this is Fiction Crime Time. I'm your host, Adam Farmer. What you just heard in the intro was the voicemail which started it all. It was left by my friend Jacob in Oz. He's a detective with the Emerald City Guard. He knew about my interest in starting a true crime podcast, and said he would let me know if a case came up. Long story short, a case came up. I arrived in the Emerald City early in the morning. Don't ask how I got there. Traveling between worlds is complicated, and I don't even understand it all. The City of Emeralds. A city constantly bustling with commerce and radiating with bright green rays. The rays are so intense that everyone is required to wear specially designed glasses when inside the walls. The city seems fairly unchanged since the last time I visited. My first stop is the newsstand on Main Street. If what Jacob has to tell me is this urgent, then I may find some hint in today's paper. I quickly and almost ironically find that I am correct in that assumption. On the front page are big bold letters reading, "Many homicides in the country." Pretty straightforward. Other papers would say things like, "Body found," or "Killer on the loose," and you would need to read more to get the gist of the story. In Oz, people often say it as it is. While I read the story, there's one particular name that keeps popping up in relation to the murders. Dorothy Gale. According to this article, not much is known of the girl. They say she's from a place called Kansas and is rumored to work for an unknown crime lord known as Auntie M, but that has not yet been proven. Dorothy has eluded arrest, and witnesses say she disappeared. Like, literally, vanished into thin air. Now, even in Oz, that is a strange thing to see. People don't normally disappear like that. She was last seen in the lands to the south, in the castle of Glinda, the Witch of the South, not to be confused with the Witch of the North, whose name also happens to be Glinda. I know, confusing, right? As I continue reading, I soon find that I may have my work cut out for me. This Dorothy Gale is said to be a dangerous criminal responsible for the deaths of 2 witches, a bobcat, 40 dogs, 40 crows, and a swarm of bees, which we all know is very detrimental to the environment. I mean, you can't just go around killing bees. Now, these killings didn't happen in one place either. They were spread throughout the lands to the north, south, east, and west. Because of this, the OBI was called in to take over the investigation. OBI stands for Ozian Bureau of Investigations, basically the Ozian equivalent to the FBI. As I dwell on this article, I'm filled with both excitement and nervousness. This is a high-profile case, possibly the biggest one in the history of Oz. I'm not sure if I'm cut out for the big leagues yet, but despite my doubts, I pay the young newsboy for the paper and head to Jacob's house to see what he has to say.
Hey, how's it going?
Jacob welcomes me at the door. We catch up a little as he lets me inside. Inside the house, I notice a change in the living area since the last time I visited. Papers are spread about on the coffee table, and on the wall is one of those investigation maps you only see in movies. These are crime scene photos connected to sticky notes with strings and pens.
Well, I see you put up new decorations.
Yeah. Let me give you a quick rundown while we fix up something to eat.
As we sit on his porch, Jacob tells me about the murders as they are described in the newspaper. He says that because of the involvement and the disappearance of the wizard, his department was put on the case in the beginning. But once there was a connection to other murders across the borders, the OBI took over. I expected as much after reading the paper. Jacob said that his department moved their focus to the disappearance of the wizard. The wizard did say that he was only traveling to visit a family member, but it has been over 2 months without a word. So, the city guard moved their focus to his disappearance and away from the murders. But Jacob wasn't quite ready to let go of the Dorothy Gale case. He saw that there may be connections between the two cases, but there was a consequence for his unwillingness to comply.
Wait, what do you mean you were put on leave?
It said I was too involved in the case, but I take that as saying I was asking too many questions.
What do you mean by that?
I mean that there are some questions that aren't being asked, and the higher-ups don't want to ask them. The OBI swooped in, and we were told to keep out of their way. But I keep investigating what they didn't want us investigating and paid the price for it.
What exactly does Jacob mean by that? It sounds like he's hinting at conspiracy, but it could just be a simple power struggle between the jurisdictions. This happens all the time when another department swoops in to take over a case already being investigated. There are many different ways to explain this, but I'm not ready to believe in any conspiracies yet. I'm not really into conspiracies. I believe in looking at a story from all angles, but I also look at the facts, not my own assumption. Jacob seems to be jumping to conclusions too fast for me to be comfortable with. It actually seems odd to me, and very uncharacteristic of a veteran detective. Maybe Jacob is just too close to his opinions of the case, that he can't see the whole picture clearly. It happens to the best detectives. They get too close and trust their hunch more than the facts. Sometimes their hunch pays off in the end, but other times it causes a killer to walk free. Now, that being said, let's look at it a different way. Let's say there is something more to this hunch. I mean, let's be real. How could one little girl from Kansas commit that many murders in that time frame, spanning throughout that much area of land? Now, I've never been to Kansas, but I don't think it's known as a breeding ground for serial killers. But despite this little bit of speculation, the authorities are sticking like glue to their theory of only one serial killer with no possibility of any accomplices. I mean, they have eyewitnesses claiming that Dorothy acted alone, and there's no evidence to the contrary. Like I said before, I'm no conspiracy theorist, but that sounds odd. In fact, it sounds a little too perfect.
So wait, you mean to tell me that during this investigation, they questioned no one else as a suspect?
No, no one else. All of the witness testimony they have on record, as well as the evidence collected at the scenes, only point to one killer.
So why do you believe otherwise? Like, I mean, if this case is as open and shut as they say it is, why keep digging around for new theories that may or may not be there?
It just doesn't feel right. None of this feels right.
Jacob's current mindset reminds me of the detective Arbogast in Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho. When he is unsatisfied with Norman Bates' answers to his questions, he says, quote, "If it doesn't gel, it isn't aspic, and this ain't gelling," end quote. I find that Jacob is having the same issue that Arbogast had. No matter which way you mix the ingredients of the story together, they aren't gelling. And the more I investigate these murders, the more I find myself noticing that the story at its core isn't gelling. Now, does that mean that Dorothy didn't act alone? Does that mean that there are other accomplices running free, and the OBI is just completely wrong? I don't have those answers yet. I don't have definite proof to make myself feel comfortable believing or making any conclusions yet. For all I know, the official story may be correct, and I may be on a wild goose chase. But I don't think I can live with my curiosity if I don't look further into it. And I don't think I can live with myself if I didn't help my friend find answers, whether he likes them or not. I asked Jacob where I should start.
Munchkin Land. That's where it all started. So I think you should start there as well. But here, take these files with you. These are copies of the evidence and witness testimony. I still have some friends at the station who keep me updated.
Jacob stays behind and says he would let me know if there are any new breaks in the case, and I head out to the small country of Munchkin Land. I travel to Munchkin Land in the Aussian equivalent of an Uber, which is basically a horse and carriage. I could have chosen a steam-powered motor cart, but the carriage is cheaper and it has a higher rating. Plus, I wanted to give myself enough time on the ride there to look over the files. It was an overnight trip, so basically while I wasn't sleeping, I was reading the files and trying to stay awake. According to the files, the first victim was killed with a house in the center of Munchkin City. The house is still at the crime scene because, well, it's a house. The body of Ebony, the Witch of the East, was recovered and buried in Munchkin Land Cemetery after it was released into the mayor's custody from the morgue. Efforts are finally being made to remove the house from the crime scene. The second victim was decapitated on the Yellow Brick Road near the Emerald City, presumably with an axe, though the weapon has yet to be recovered. The body of Bruno the Bobcat was recovered and buried by loved ones after it was released from the morgue. The third crime scene in the land of the Winkies to the west had many victims. Too many to have their names said on this episode. Now, that does not make their lives any less important, and I promise to focus on them in subsequent episodes. The decapitated bodies were all recovered, and attempts are being made to identify them so that their loved ones can be contacted. In total, there were 40 dogs, 40 crows, and an undetermined number of bees. The murder weapon is determined to be the same axe as the second murder, but it still has yet to be recovered. The final victim was melted in her own castle in Winkie Country. The body of Ivory, the Witch of the West, was never recovered. The only evidence found was an empty bucket, determined to have contained water. The remaining pieces of evidence were collected when Dorothy disappeared in the south. There was a golden helmet rumored to control a pack of flying monkeys, which was stolen from Ivory's castle. There was also a pair of ruby slippers, said to have been stolen right off of Ebony's feet. The file has a list of key witness statements, which I will go over for you as they come up in my investigation. My first key witness is the mayor of Munchkin City. He was said to have known the first victim, Ebony, personally, and was also there the day she was killed. But before I work up the courage to call his office, I decide to knock on a few doors in Munchkin City to see if any ordinary citizens would be willing to talk to me. Hi, I'm Adam Farmer. I'm an investigative storyteller looking into the Dorothy Gale killings.
Hi, is there anything you can tell me about Dorothy?
Needless to say, Munchkin City is a pretty small town that, thanks to recent events, does not take too kindly to strangers who come in asking too many questions. Most small towns are like this. They shut themselves off from tourists and out-of-towners, especially after something big like this happens and brings in a lot of people. I begin to give up, but decide to try a few more houses when this happens.
Hello. My name is Adam, and I'm an amateur investigative storyteller looking into the Dorothy Gale killings. Would you mind if I ask a few questions?
Oh, I wouldn't mind at all. In fact, do you want to come in for some tea? Let's go out to the garden. Onessa, bring us some tea outside.
Coming, dearie.
Jackpot. This man's name is Bach, and his wife is named Onessa. Bach leads me to his garden behind his house. We sit at a small table, and Onessa brings out some tea and joins us.
So, I hear you've been all around town trying to ask about the witch killer.
I guess news travels fast around here.
Oh, you betcha. But that's because there's rarely ever anything to talk about. We Munchkins are quiet folk who tend to stay to ourselves most of the time.
Yeah, so I guess that means it was a surprise to you when a house literally fell from the sky.
Oh, yeah. It's safe to say that. The whole town was talking about it. We didn't know what to do. The witch was dead, and then there was a witch killer walking about. You know, she stayed here the evening she arrived, right?
Am I the luckiest guy, or am I the luckiest guy?
No, I was not aware of that. I must have missed it. I read all of the files, and I didn't see your names mentioned.
Well, that's because no one asked us anything. We told the Munchkin authorities, but they didn't think it was important to ask any further questions. And once OBI took over the case after it crossed the border, well, nothing came back to us.
It sort of made sense that the OBI didn't follow up with Bach. I mean, he did tell the Munchkin authorities all he knew. And they probably put it in the file that was given to the OBI. But still, I would think that the OBI would want to at least follow up and ask more questions. Even if it may not have been backed up by any evidence they had, I would think they would at least be curious to hear what Bach and Onessa have to say. Maybe there is something to Jacob's theory after all. But I'll refrain from jumping to any conclusions without evidence.
That does sound rather strange. Was there any important information that you feel would have helped in the investigation if you had the opportunity to share it?
Well, you know, I'm not sure, because I don't know what they have and what they don't have. All I can say is that she was alone besides her small dog that followed her everywhere. She came inside, slept in our guest room, but there is one thing I'll never forget. The sight of those silver slippers she had on when she walked in.
Wait, what?
I'm sorry, did you say that she had on silver slippers?
Oh, you betcha.
Are you sure that it wasn't a trick of the light and the slippers were actually a different color?
No, I am 100% sure they were silver.
Yes, we will never forget the sight of them. It was as if seeing them made us trust her. It made her seem so innocent to us. She could have asked us to do anything, and I am almost certain we would have. Looking back, those slippers, they frightened me. But they were, without a doubt, silver.
She says, without a doubt. So why do I still have my doubts? I mean, the report says that the slippers were ruby. The witnesses claim she was wearing ruby slippers. There is even a pair of ruby slippers in evidence lockup right now. So why do Bach and Onessa remember them differently? Are they simply mistaken? Or did Dorothy simply change shoes? But this also brings back the question of why were Bach and Onessa not questioned by the OBI? I mean, clearly this is important information that changes the narrative the OBI has built. If the slippers were truly silver, why change the narrative to claim they were ruby? Whose slippers are those sitting in lockup? More importantly, where are these silver slippers if they actually do exist? None of these are certainties. They're all speculation based around the witness testimony from Bach and Onessa. But the one thing that I do know for certain is that the more ingredients I add to this story, the more I find that it's not gelling. None of this is gelling. And I find myself unsatisfied, and my curiosity is sparked more than it previously was. I'm pumped. I'm excited. This is what I've been waiting for. This new lead, this whatever it may be. There's something here worth looking into. I also remember that the mare was close with Ebony before she died, and the slippers belonged to Ebony. So surely the mare knows the true color. I looked back over the files to find his witness testimony, and oddly, I found nothing there. Other witnesses made statements confirming the color of the slippers, so why would the OBI not ask the man who knew the victim? I mean, if they were as close as rumors say they were, surely he would recognize the color of the slippers that he saw almost every day. These new discoveries have given me some pretty interesting talking points to bring up with the mayor. I can't wait to hear what he has to say next time on Fiction Crime Time. Thank you for listening to Fiction Crime Time. This episode was written and narrated by me, Adam Farmer. It featured the voice talents of Jacob Segura, Michelle Lee, and Connor McGuire. Be sure to follow Fiction Crime Time on social media at Fiction Crime Time on Instagram and Facebook. A new episode will be released every other week, so be on the lookout for episode 2 on January 19th, wherever you get your podcasts.